You're listening to Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, where we talk about what it means to be en route with Jesus in our day-to-day life. Navigating life and faith in our complex and changing society is hard. Our goal is to keep you unterwegs with Jesus, moving forward as you follow God's calling on your life. I am Mike Piccinato, and in this series, we are talking with Stephen and Jenny Jones, founders and staff with Exigent Communication, as they prepare to move with their family to Berlin, Germany, and join the staff of Envision Berlin. The springboard for our conversations is Stephen's book, Transitions Across Cultures, and his Cross-Cultural Transition Handbook, which can be tailored to fit the needs of cross-cultural ministry organizations. Today's episode is part three of a three-part series on culture. And if you want to go back and listen to the first two parts of this series, episode 8 talked about what culture is and gave some illustrations about it. Episode 9 talked about tacit knowledge and how that impacts culture and our understanding of other cultures. And in today's episode, we'll be exploring cultural disorientation and some of the impacts of that on our lives. Today's episode starts pretty abruptly with a quick question for Stephen and Jenny. What are some of the disorienting factors that you guys are anticipating when you come? Or maybe causes for disorientation?
Well, I mean, we've talked about language. We participated in a week of like German family camp, like language camp, which was great.
It was virtual. It was on Zoom. I was like, is this going to work? And it did. It was great.
Because we were like, they were German from like they were speaking German from the beginning to the end. There were some allowances for English, which were super helpful, and they did a good job of giving context and body language and stuff. But like, oh my goodness, it's good to remember how stressful and how wearing that is.
Right, because we were doing just 3 hours a day.
With breaks.
And it was like, whew, you know,
to be
like exhausting.
Present where you can't understand the story that's being told or the person that's, or the song that's being sung that you should be able to participate in and can't. Even happy birthday, like we sang happy birthday once and it's like, oh, okay. Like it wasn't the American version of happy birthday. I think it was.
In Berlin, a lot of them do sing the American version. Yeah. It's just a different accent to it. It'll be a fun experience the first time you hear it.
One of the things that I've been realizing in terms of something that I'm sure I'm going to find disorienting is that because I've traveled a fair amount and had to quickly figure out how to function in a bunch of different cultures, I often have done that fairly well compared to people's expectations of me as a tourist or, you know, as a foreigner, right? And realizing that metric is not the metric now, right? Like now I will be needing to function as a resident and the bar is much, much, much higher. And so the little things, I don't know if they're tricks exactly, but little ways that I would figure out how to kind of quickly become slightly better than the low bar that tourists have is almost meaningless. So I think that one of the things that I will find disorienting is going from being somebody who feels relatively culturally adept, again, compared to those low expectations, to being somebody who feels quite culturally incompetent.
Because with the new set of expectations, I am.
One of the obvious differences is that we'll be living in an apartment that's our own versus staying in a guest house or staying in someone else's house. So we'll have to to learn those expectations of what does it mean to be loud or quiet or take care of certain things or, what that all means. Yeah, and the expectation is as a resident versus a guest or slash tourist.
I think even parenting, I mean, I mentioned it before, but like we haven't been out of the U.S. with our kids. So we've done a fair amount of traveling in the U.S. with our kids. But so I have never parented my children outside of a relatively familiar context. So I don't know how to do that.
So what's okay and what's not okay, and what's the expected form of discipline, or when have you crossed the line?
Or even what questions are they going to have, you know, that I have no idea how to answer.
And sometimes there's that nobody's telling you what the differences are. You just have to discover them because the people you're closest to don't know them either. We have the oldest kids on the team here. And so we're the first ones discovering what some of these cultural things are. Johanna went to an evangelical church equivalent of confirmation. And we showed up and realized we were like, we had dressed up, but we were horribly underdressed for what everybody else was looking at the event for. And everybody else was giving these huge gifts to their kids at this accomplishment in life. And we're looking at Johanna and we're like, yeah, whoops. You know, I mean, nobody prepared us for that. Yeah, sometimes that's just completely disorienting and there's nothing you can do.
Right.
When we were going to MTI, Missionary Training Institute in Colorado Springs, one of the things that they focused on teaching us was there are going to be differences that you notice in the culture that you go into. Sometimes those differences are good differences. You're going to say, well, that's really smart. Why don't we do it that way in the U.S.? And sometimes you're going to notice things that are bad. They violate moral code, not just your moral code. They're just morally improper. And other times they'll just be different. They're not good different. They're not bad different. They're just different. It seems like our default reaction is to respond to all differences as if they're bad, as if the way we do things are best. How do we adjust that mindset a little bit? How do we approach these cultural, if not shock, the disorientation from culture? How do we approach that in a way that's maybe healthier?
So an example came to mind a little bit is thinking about church and music and how it feels like even in our own, you know, we always, no, maybe not always, but we think about that next generation who does church worship differently. It's like, well, I think there's some kindness and grace that needs to be involved in how we perceive difference, even in our own culture. And so it's like, what does it mean to walk with kindness and grace into another culture?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few different layers to it, but one of the things that kind of at this maybe foundational level is really important is when I know that I am also experiencing the world culturally, that I'm not normal or neutral, right? Like that humanity doesn't look like my experience of it, but that I have a particular cultural experience of humanity, and that that's also true, you know, in terms of faith, and expressions of that, that sets us up to be able to, I think, look at those options that you mentioned, right? Is this a good difference, a bad difference, or just a neutral, or, you know, neither good or bad difference? And I think that if we think of ourselves as being normal, which is often the case, then it's difficult to perceive other differences as good. Even good differences can feel threatening if I'm normal, because it's like, oh, here's something good. How can they have anything good? I'm the one that's right, you know? And so it's like that itself can be disorienting, finding the good thing. So if we understand ourselves as contextualized, maybe from both a faith perspective as well as a just kind of daily living perspective, then I think it gives us space to hold those differences and to say, okay, actually, I also am different. It's not just this host culture that's different. I am different. And this is where I think, at least as a follower of Jesus, like part of what becomes really important is to be able to say, okay, so then what is true? What is unchanging? Even if the way that I know those true and unchanging things is itself cultural, it doesn't mean that there's no stability. It doesn't mean that there's nothing to hold on to. And I think that that's maybe one of the things, is to find a good anchor, so that when we're encountering those kinds of differences, it's not completely disorienting, but it's perhaps very disorienting, but not completely. Okay, here's a difference that I think is potentially disorienting. I've had students who've gone to live with and learn from other Christians in different parts of the world, who sometimes are living as people who are of the minority faith where they are. And that has sometimes been deeply disorienting to my students, because to them, growing up in the U.S. context, to be Christian was to be in the majority, at least in their town or their, you know, where they were from. And so to discover Christians who were not in the majority and who didn't have the privileges that sometimes go with that, whether that's power or protection from authority or whatever, it pushed on some of their understanding of what it means to follow Jesus, right? And the initial interpretation is, well, my way of being in the world, where being a Christian is being in the majority, that's the normal way. Or the idea that being a Christian, the way that I'm a Christian in the world, which is, you know, having power or having wealth or having, or at least maybe not wealth in the way that they think of wealth, but wealth in the way of not having lack materially. When they think of that as being normal, and then they encounter somebody else who's a follower of Jesus who does not have those things, it can be quite disorienting. And so there has to be some anchor point outside of both of those cultures. And this is where I think scripture is actually so practically relevant, to say, well, what are the stories of what it means to walk as somebody who's part of God's family? And we see both poverty and wealth there. We see both power and lack of power there. And we see problems, you know, no matter how people are, we see problems and opportunities on every side. And so to have a reference point that's outside of my culture or the host culture is really very helpful. And then to say, okay, so the unchanging thing, the thing that we have in common, is that we're both brought into this reconciled relationship with God through Jesus. And we both are on this journey. When I say we both, I'm saying both, you know, Christians from both cultural contexts, we're both in this journey of becoming more like Christ. And we both have things that we have to repent of, and we both have areas that, you know, the Holy Spirit is leading us in sanctification. And I don't know, does that help?
I think so. I think the encouragement to have an anchor point that maybe allows us to understand ourselves from our own culture and give freedom for another culture to exist, that doesn't become destructive to our own cultural understanding or force us to destroy somebody else's cultural understanding, is important. But sometimes those are hard to find.
Mm-hmm. Especially when you get into things that feel morally problematic, right? So if you're not aware of something like direct and indirect communication, when you find somebody communicating the other way, it feels morally problematic. And of course, there are loads of other things that become morally complicated when you're moving across cultures.
So I think this applies, but we, when we were in college, I spent 10 weeks in Mexico with a team from our college, and Stephen was there also, and he spent longer. But we, as a team, watched a movie in our host family's house, but it was in a bedroom. But there was like, what, 12 of us in there?
Yeah.
Or more than that. I don't remember. There were
12.
Yeah. But it was mixed gender. But it also felt, to me, it was like, oh, this is our living room space, because the living room space in the house didn't feel like a living room, because it was a communal space. And we're like, okay, where do we be as a team? How can we chill? So we watched a movie.
And we were like super quiet because we didn't want to bother the family.
Yeah, and it was late. It was later. I don't remember if they were in bed or not. But we found out via some indirect communication that that was not the thing that we should do. We couldn't do that anymore.
There were layers of indirect communication.
Yeah, that happened. So we found out via our, you know, person in charge that we couldn't do that anymore. And it didn't make sense because we're like, it's not that like there were two people. Well, it's not
part,
like
part of the difficulty was that they had said, well, you guys were so noisy, you know, that it really disrupted the host family. And we're like, we were really not noisy. Like we were absurdly not noisy. Well, it turns out that the thing that was the concern was that they had no idea what was going on in there. And actually the fact that we were so quiet was a problem. They were like, what's going on?
Noise was an issue, but the lack of.
Yeah, absolutely. So both what we had done, we had crossed their moral boundaries without having any idea that we were doing it.
But in our context, we were following all the right ones, like our Christian context.
Right.
We were ticking all the boxes.
Yeah. You know? And then the way that they communicated with us felt morally wrong because it's like, you're not being honest with us, you know?
Why didn't they just come to us and tell us? Why didn't they stop us in the middle of the movie and be like, guys, you can't do this?
But of course, what they were doing is preserving the relationship.
So what's the anchor in that situation?
I think the part of the anchor there, so it was at a more basic level because we didn't necessarily have shared faith with everybody that was part of the families that were hosting us. So there was this, in terms of the shared piece, there was this shared commitment to making it work, right? And shared humanity were part of that. But then on our side, there was this, I don't think we necessarily did this well as a team, but there was a commitment to saying, okay, we do want to honor this family because that's a better witness to Jesus. And so even if we don't understand it, us understanding why we're being restricted in this way matters less than us caring about the family in a way that makes sense to them. Mm. And of course and I say we didn't necessarily do that well, but that was at least a place that I think we did. I remember we were talking with some missionaries there and trying to figure it out. And the particular folks we were talking to said, yeah, we don't understand what happened either. It doesn't make sense to us, but you need to submit to what they said and here's why. And so it's like, okay.
So it's not that you'll always find a shared anchor.
I mean, no, maybe it is important to find some commonality though, right? At a very basic level to say we are all human, right? And to say the fact that we're existing in the same space and we're relating with each other is a shared anchor of sorts. And I think it's important not to skip past that because if we only let the big anchors of, you know, faith or something count, like, no, like actually the shared humanity is so deeply important. And there are theological reasons for us why that is the case. And there are other reasons why that is for other people that that's the case. But to be able to say, yeah, no, I acknowledge you as a human and as a full and complex person, even if I don't understand you, and I want to honor you because that is good.
And maybe even acknowledging we're at this moment experiencing a cultural difference can be a shared anchor if both people have the language and words to say that.
Yeah, and I think there's a sense of, like for us, we were definitely trying to stick our cultural norms into a different cultural atmosphere, and it didn't fit, like, and we weren't aware of how it didn't fit, but it didn't fit, you know, the round peg in a square hole sort of thing. So I think, I don't know if we had the ability at that point, but it's like, okay, what is actually the deep down need in that moment? And I think part of it is like, well, we want a sense of normalcy in what we understood as normal. Again, I don't know if we could have voiced that at that time if we would have had the language for it, but it's like, no, we were looking for a space to not think about Spanish, not think about the fact that we were not in our homes, that we were, you know, we want a moment of normal. So it's like, well, yeah, how do we do that differently? Or what's the appropriate way to find that normal or to cope in that situation?
All right, so Stephen and Jenny, at a future date, we're going to go back. And I think especially after you've experienced some of the culture shocks of moving into a new culture, look back and talk about what are some of the culture shocks you've experienced. But looking forward, why is it impossible for us to just avoid culture shock altogether?
I think that in some ways people can, but the only way to really do it is to refuse to engage the culture deeply.
On that note, I was thinking about this earlier, and I spent 3 weeks in Europe as a I just graduated high school, and I feel like I probably felt culture shock because I was with all these different Americans from all these different places, but I don't think I really experienced, there are probably some ways, I should probably rephrase that a little bit. I don't feel like it affected me. Like the differences didn't affect me because I could just bounce from country to country and different experience to different experience. So I don't feel like I experienced the disorientation that culture shock can bring.
Mm-hmm. And part of it would be the length of time, right? And like you said, mm-hmm. jumping around from place to place. And part of it was that you were surrounded by Americans. But yeah, I mean, I think that sometimes people will go and kind of create their own little expat enclave and kind of not really engage the culture. And so they might experience adjustment shock, you know, that kind of thing, transition, but not necessarily culture shock itself. But I'm very skeptical when people tell me they don't experience culture shock, because even like the people who I know who are more interculturally experienced and competent seem to be the ones also that say that are aware of how culture shock is affecting them. So it's not like understanding culture better keeps you from experiencing culture shock. It's just that you have framing for it as it's happening. I think more often when people feel like they haven't experienced culture shock, it's maybe that it has happened without them realizing that that's what was going on. Yeah, I think that just kind of at this really basic level, the reason that we can't avoid it is because over and over and over and over again, we will be disoriented, we'll be thrown off. Something that we think we know how the world works will be wrong. Some way that we think we know who we are in the world won't fit. And it just will happen so many times that even though I think there are things that we are going to love about German culture and there are things that we're going to love about being in Berlin, I expect that we will also walk through a pretty significant time of things being very difficult. Like one of the things that's weird about culture shock is the difficulty is not always the thing that is directly in front of you, right? It's the overall experience. And so like the overall experience of disorientation is absolutely something that we're going to face. I don't think there's any way around it. I don't think that we could read enough books or watch enough movies or talk with enough people to avoid it, because we live in the world in a cultural way. And we're going to a place where that cultural way isn't the way that life is done.
I feel like also there's a phrase that I feel like you heard often from your students saying that I didn't sign up for this. Like, and they would say that, you know,
usually like about three months in.
Yeah. Like halfway through their experience, they're like, this isn't, why did you do this? And it was consistent that that feels like that's the phrase that they would use.
Yeah.
We at House Church today, we're talking with some of our former teammates who have been here just about a year now, and just the idea that the common phrase for that first year is, man, I'm really tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think the adjustments to the constant rolling wave of changes, you can't after a couple of weeks say, whew, wow, it's nice to be back home now, because the changes just keep coming. Thanks again for joining us. I know in the middle of a move, it's not like you have a ton of extra time to offer. And I really appreciate that you guys have processed that with us, some of the things you're going through and expectations. I think it just makes this series so much more real for people. It's not theory that they're hearing. It's what you guys are experiencing as well. And I'm super grateful for your transparency.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's good for us to, because it is so easy in the move. And this is something I've seen with people who are in the midst of transitions across cultures, is that often it's so hard to take the time to stop and actually put words to what you're experiencing. And I think it's a good exercise. It's been good for us.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to all of you for joining us as well. This concludes our three-part series with Stephen and Jenny Jones about culture. Next week, I'll be back again interviewing a friend of mine as we start a new, off-and-on recurring series where I ask people about transitions in their own life and challenges that they've faced and decisions that they've made. And the goal there, I'll introduce it a little more next week, but the goal is to ask people the same five questions and to do that with a variety of people. During today's episode, we had to cut quite a bit of material due to length, and I'm a bit curious as to whether or not people would be interested in hearing that if we made it available on a Patreon site. If you are interested and would like to hear some details, including how this ties in with Stephen's doctoral work or an illustration about sea glass and culture change, drop me a line at podcast@envisionberlin.com. Again, that's podcast@envisionberlin.com. You can find that email address also in our show notes below. Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, is a production of I Am Intercultural, a division of Exigent Communication, in partnership with Envision Berlin. Please like, share, and subscribe. Podcast music is by Mike Picanato.